Shadow governments, strange rituals, new world
shadow
order,
governments, strange
buried treasures,
new
planetary mind control,
military
cover-up,
shadow governments, strange rituals, new world order, buried treasures, planetary mind control,
unidentified flying
objects,
presidential assassination,
unidentified flying objects, presidential assassination,
ancient rights,
population,
freemasons,
fascists,
cryptozoologists,
apocalypse,
Out there. It's a strange world.
Visit outthereradio.net for more information.
you'll be caught bored waiting for something to go bump in the night? Listen to the Paranormal Broadcast System with Brad, Brandon, Todd, and Paul.
Well, hello, Mr. Fancy Man.
Listen to some great interviews with some amazing guests that run the gamut from ghost hunting groups across the country to paranormal personalities in the media. First, let's be serious for a moment. Then let's have some fun! We've got it all covered. Tune in and listen to intriguing interviews with our hosts from LA Spirits and the Louisiana Spectral Research Center. Then kick back and listen to us try to be funny with some crazy Cajuns. And some other guys, too. This is no kids show, folks. It's the Paranormal Broadcast System. Listen to us poke fun at ourselves. It's funnier that way. You can find us at www.lagghosts.com. That's www.laghost.com.
You are listening to Ghostly Talk with your hosts Doug and Scott L.
Yes. Don't forget, all of the music on Ghostly Talk is independent music.
And I believe that was the band you just heard.
Yeah.
This is was an honor for me.
Really?
I'm pretty sure if it wasn't this break, it'll be one of the breaks tonight. One of the bands we're playing tonight is a band called Hallow's Eve.
Oh, wow.
This is a band, one of the old, because there's a lot of them out there, I found out, for the old school metalhead guys like me. Hallow's Eve's an old Metal Blade band from, like, back with Slayer when they first started and all this stuff. They were one of the old original bands from back in the day. And I have to thank the big Satan's website again for this because,
NewsCorp.com.
You know, Satan's website, there are a few positives, and this is one of them that I was able to get in contact with Tommy Stewart from Hallow's Eve.
Wow.
And we've talked back and forth, and he's come to find out he's a big paranormal buff, too. And he actually emails me going, hey, I saw it there. I heard about this. That's pretty cool, huh? And
did you see Mike from Death also emailed us a new song?
I was just telling Bonnie about that. Congratulations to those guys. Their album is coming out on Roadrunner. We had them here on the show. This is too cool. Their album is coming out on Roadrunner Records in March, which is like a huge label. That's like Slipknot's label. It's like a crap band Nickelback
what?
Label.
They're no.
it's like all these. Column. I mean, that's how big these guys have gotten.
They're no longer so indie, proud. Or
no, unfortunately
indie?
Not. No. But hey, you know what? They took us on back in the day. Mike came here and talked with us, so I'm gonna play here.
I had a blast with Mike.
Very cool guys. But I just want to pimp this for these guys real quick. The guys from Hallow's Eve, they just had a box set coming out on Metal Blade Records.
Wow.
A retrospective with all the three albums they did. Is that, you know, on Metal Blade with live material, a DVD. It's called History of Terror. It's an absolute must-have if you're a true metalhead. It's sitting on I'm looking at it right now as we speak.
Yes,
it's sitting right over there.
It's right
so
over there.
I want to thank Tommy. It's an honor. I asked him, like, hey, can I play something off your... They have a new album out. They put a new album out. Well, it was a while back. And I'm like, do you have a... He's like, dude, are you kidding me? That's totally cool. So I'm like blown away. So thank you, Tommy, from Hallow's Eve. That was really cool. Further ado, Doug is like wetting his nails here.
I'm holding this paper. I want to get this over.
Backing away. No problem.
Excellent. Carmen Reed has decided to come forth after being silent for over 15 years and tell her story of the terrifying events that her family had endured after renting a home that was formerly a funeral home in Connecticut. Carmen is now discussing publicly the details that were left out of the book In a Dark Place and the documentary A Haunting in Connecticut. Mm. We will hopefully be getting the answers to a lot of questions people have had about this ordeal from Carmen herself. We want to welcome wholeheartedly Carmen Reed. Her website is carmenreedonline.com, and that'll be permanently linked up at ghostlytalk.com.
Mm-hmm.
Carmen, welcome to Ghostly Talk.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Well, it's really great to have you on, and I know we Tim Yancey was a person, I mentioned this earlier, Tim Yancey's a dear friend of ours, and he mentioned, he's like, would you like to have Carmen come on the show? And I'm like, are you kidding me? Absolutely.
We were biting our fingernails going, oh, please, yes.
We'd love to talk to you. So basically what we were going to discuss tonight was the story. I mean, what happened to you and your family.
It's a story that's captivated how many people. I mean, it just captivates you. The documentary, the book, it's one of the cornerstones, that has really inspired people. Mm-hmm. But of course, our imaginations run awry.
Mm-hmm.
Hollywood takes its leisures and it's Hollywood license and plays things up.
Yeah.
So that's why it's really, really, really excellent to get to talk to you, Carmen. What went on? How did it start? What was You have to tell everything.
Okay. Well, let me start with this. You're familiar with the fact that my son was very ill, the oldest one. He had cancer.
Yes. Yeah.
What everybody doesn't know is that my youngest son was a severe asthmatic, and I couldn't get anyone to watch him or care for him while I was tied up with my oldest boy because of his asthma. He was in the hospital on average 2 to 3 times a month. With severe asthma attacks, and he was under 3 at the time.
Mm-hmm.
So I had my hands full with 2 very sick boys to start with, and then when things started going downhill for my oldest boy, cancer can really take a toll on the human body.
Oh my God!
Well, when they were doing the cobalt, which is radioactive cobalt, they were bombarding his neck and head and upper chest because most of his cancer was located in his neck.
Oh.
He was dying really quickly, so I had to find a place close to where his treatment was taking place in Hartford, and we lived in a little town in upstate New York called Terryville.
Mm-hmm.
It's not even on the map, I don't think. But it was a 306-mile trek every day to get him back and forth, and the youngest one in tow.
Mm-hmm.
So I found this house. It was a beautiful home, and I didn't think I could afford it. What they don't show in the documentary is the upstairs had always been a home. It was where the director of the funeral home lived. That's where he raised his son and his wife lived.
Mm-hmm.
That is the part that I saw first. Although I did come in the entranceway of the funeral home itself, I was greeted by a boy that had jumped down the stairs with a cast up to his hip, which he had broken in that house. And another gentleman by the name of Bob with a curled up hand. And they directed me to the upstairs apartment, which was actually 2 floors. So we were talking the 3rd and 4th floor upstairs is what I'd seen. And that's what I thought I had rented. But after about 2 weeks into preparing to move, the landlord called and told me that he had actually promised it to another man that he hadn't heard from in a long time, and that he would fix the downstairs for me and my family if I would agree to it. And I didn't really have any choice, so we did.
Okay.
When they got it completed, or partially completed, me and my oldest boy and the baby went to the house so that the oldest boy could pick out his own room. Now, this is the first time he's ever going to have his own room.
Mm-hmm.
And he's 13. So I thought I'd mop the floor. It was a beautiful old cobblestone red floor. And it was in spectacular condition. I couldn't figure out how I'd kept it that way. But I bought some spick and span, and I decided to mop the floor. Well, the first thing that happened is when the mop hit the floor, it turned red. The mop water turned red. And it wasn't just a watery red like they show in the documentary. It was very thick. It oozed up between my toes, and it left a permanent stain that wore off. You couldn't wash it off. You had to wear it off.
So it was viscous in a way. It wasn't like watery like you said.
No, it was thick, very thick. It was thicker than the consistency of blood, actually. So I don't know what to compare it to.
Motor oil.
Yeah. Red motor
there
oil.
There you go. Yeah,
motor oil.
I don't play with motor oil very often, so I'm not real familiar with it. I'll go with that.
Okay.
but it smelled very pungent. It was a pungent, sweet smell. Now, I had stepped off of the floor and left a permanent impression of my toes and the ball of my feet on the hardwood floor that I couldn't get up with bleach.
Okay.
That's how stainy this was. Well, that happened every time I mopped the floor. But to go back, my son was browsing around through the rooms to pick out his bedroom, And he came back and he said, Mom, we have to leave this place. It's evil. And I'm a very practical woman. I was a computer tech at the time, and I'm saying, son, evil lives in the hearts of man. You know, this house could probably tell a great story or two if it could speak, but it couldn't be evil. It's just a building.
Yeah.
And so he said, as he walked out of the room, he said, you're going to find out the hard way.
Carmen?
Yes.
Before I'm hearing a beeping. Are you on, you're on a cell phone, right?
No, I'm not. I'm on a home phone.
Okay, I just heard a beeping. I just want to make sure it wasn't.
Why did I hear two beeps?
I heard two beeps also.
Did you hear?
Yeah, I'm hearing beeps too. Let me switch phones. Just
okay,
hold on a second.
No problem. I just don't want to, I don't want it to die on us in the middle of this show.
Right.
Yeah, I'm on a cable phone. I don't know why it's beeping. It just does it. I mean, it's never done that before.
Okay,
we'll try this one and see how this one works.
Can
you
hear
better.
Me? Oh, that's
yeah,
a lot better,
sounds
actually.
Good.
Yeah, that
sounds
really
fantastic.
Okay.
I didn't mean to interrupt you, but I just want to make sure we wouldn't have any problems.
Okay. All right, back to that. It was still about two weeks before we moved in. Well, I'm sleeping one night, and I have this dream that I've been to the funeral home, and I come straight up out of the bed. Now, the baby still slept in our room because of his asthma.
Mm-hmm.
I come straight up out of bed, and I grab my husband's arm, and I say, Ed, I've just rented a funeral home. And he rolled over and looked at me and says, what makes you think that? And I said, I dreamt it. He said, oh, you and your dreams.
Oh.
And, you know, normal male response to a woman's hormonal.
Right. Uh-huh.
Bonnie agrees.
But anyway.
Typical insensitivity.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yes, yes. And then he thought about it for a second. And he said, well, even if it was a funeral home, what's the big deal? Nobody died there. It's not like a ghost would hang out in a funeral home. Why would they?
Mm-hmm.
And I said, okay, that's logical, and back to bed I went. Well, when we go to move in, now we got a U-Haul, and we've got everything we own in that U-Haul, and we're there. Before I go in, I say, please, to him and his brother, please go in and see if it's a funeral home. They come out hee-haw laughing at me. How could you not know? There's kneelers, there's coffin pillows. How could you possibly not know it was a funeral home?
Oh, my God.
Well, I go downstairs, and I'm about to freak out because I've got a son that's severely ill, and I don't want him to think about his own mortality at 13, you know, and I'm almost frantic. I'm like, oh, my God, what are we going to do?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we spend everything we've got on his cancer and this move. So we talked to the landlord, and he got all the stuff out that he knew was part of the funeral parlor, except for in this one room where they put the little signs together that they have when you walk in.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Those directory
signs. Bondo's room and whatever that. Well, they're the ancient ones. They're antique. And there's an ancient embalming machine. Nobody knew what it was at the time. And there's a lung nail and a few other things.
Mm-hmm.
The blood tank had been concreted over. See, with a funeral home, you cannot put human blood in the sewer system.
Right.
Nope.
To be separated. So they capture it in this tank, and I guess they bury it. I don't really know what they do with it. But this went into the ground, and they concreted over it. And there was a pallet there. So you've got a little bit of a layout of the house. There's a body lift that went, it was 8 foot long and about 3 foot wide. It went straight from the morgue up into my master bedroom.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun when it started rattling, but I'll get to that.
Well, see, the thing is normally, because, you know, we've seen a preview of what had happened, mm-hmm. you know, subsequently. But normally, if somebody was like, yeah, I'm gonna look at this place, and if I were looking and I found a funeral home, even if it was like I was a kid,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And I just think that I would think that it would be so cool. Now, your situation, though, Carmen,
was
much,
yeah.
much, much different than mm-hmm. my childhood. So, you know, because you had two children
really
that were sick and needed caring, and so you were in and out of hospitals every day, and so you had a much different time in your life with them than I had growing up. But when I was a kid, I think I would have liked that because it's different, it's freaky, it's weird, it's odd, it's not normal to live in a funeral home. The other thing, and so it's really bizarre that you know, I get this like two reactions, Carmen. Two reactions. One is like, ooh, that's so morbid and gross, and you know. Well, but at the other time, it's like, ooh, it's kind of exhilarating.
It's
so
exhilarating because you know what? Well, I mean, what you're thinking, obviously, that, you know, if you see that initially.
Well, I mean, if I hadn't known the rest of, you know, yeah, or had a preview of the rest of the story, I would think that it would be exhilarating, not scary. Mm-hmm. So at that time, you probably thought, this is pretty scary, though. You were on the scary side, the yucky side.
Mm-hmm.
No, I wasn't actually. You know, at the time, I did not want my son to think about his death, but I didn't believe in ghosts or anything like that, so I didn't think of anything. I thought I could have a really great Halloween get-up.
Yeah. So you were the practical computer person, you know, logical, and yes, okay.
Yeah, I can. If I can't see it, I can't touch it, I can't measure it, it doesn't exist. Mm-hmm. I mean, I do believe in God, and I did at the time, but I didn't really think much about spirits and them interacting with us. I didn't, you know, didn't really have an opinion one way or another. I didn't believe that they existed. I came not to believe when the kids started, I kept punishing the kids for talking about ghosts, because it was scaring each of the kids and causing me havoc. But when we first moved in and I didn't tell them what it was, it took, guess how long, before the neighborhood kids told them?
How long?
Less than an hour.
Yeah, I was thinking a day, 2 days.
Less than an hour.
than an hour. He goes up to introduce himself to some neighborhood boys, and, hey, did you know that house was a funeral home? Let's go look at the morgue. And that's the first thing they did, and they're down there pushing each other around on the gurney.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, my goodness.
And that's what I would have done.
Well, yeah, you know.
When I were a kid, I feel like I'm doing a Broadway show.
Grammar Man here on Ghostly Talk.
When I was a kid, I think that that's probably what I would have been doing, exactly that.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, so far, there's no indication other than the mopping that anything was amiss. It was just a renovated funeral home, which is really interesting, Carmen, because one of the things that I've noticed is over the years in investigating things, when a renovation happens, a renovation tends to do one of two things: either make an active haunting subside, or really go strong.
Stir it up.
It goes one way or the other. It usually doesn't stay the same. Mm-hmm. When a renovation happens, it goes one way or the other: either subsides down into a minimum, or go berserk.
Yeah, go
crazy. Sounds like you had the wrong way, but
yeah, it went really crazy. And actually, a lot of the workmen were having problems, like the carpenter that was in there. This was the first story I heard. He went out to the truck one day and got his ladder and came back in and set it up. Well, he'd forgotten a tool, and he went back out to get the tool, and he came back and his ladder was gone, along with his toolbox.
Just
and
gone?
He knew he'd put it there. Yeah, it was gone.
It just disappeared.
It was back on his truck.
Oh, it was back on his truck. Okay.
Oh, my gosh.
But, I mean, it moved from where he had it to back on his truck. And that happened frequently with the workmen. They would start a project and something would happen to interrupt them. Or like the boy that got his leg broken. And the first gentleman that spoke to me had a stroke. So it was a constant occurrence of something happening. Somebody was getting hurt. Somebody had something happen to them that was out of the ordinary.
You know, I just, over the weekend here, too, I just want to mention this. Speaking of work people, Carmen, this inn that we were at, like we were talking about in the earlier part of the show, Marilyn, who runs the Indigo Inn, like I was talking about, in Fremont, Michigan, she was telling me the story of an electrician that was coming through to check out some of the rooms. And this, to make a long story short, apparently she was discussing this guy, and this man came in to do some work like anybody, just an electrician, right? He comes in there, and he reportedly saw a waist-up of a person coming down the hall, one of the hallways of this inn, right?
Did he quit?
He wouldn't come back in.
Wow.
He would not come back in. He would not.
That happened a lot in my house,
yeah,
too.
So how many folks went through the house and like, workers, like, quit or didn't show up the next day? You know, how often?
Quite a few. Wow. Well, the crew that was there, had a lot of tragedies happen to them while they were doing the job, and they were from they'd come up from up south, from down south.
Okay.
So they were all Southerners. They were out of town workers, and they kept having these bad things happen. Well, now in the documentary, they show me going to get this woman and say, "What's going on with this floor? What am I doing wrong?"
Mm-hmm.
I did do that, and she did come. Only she looked up at me and said, "I don't know," walked out the door, and never came back.
That's what she did for real.
That's what she did for real.
Well,
and she never came back, and he couldn't keep workmen to come into the house because things would just be too freaky for them, or they'd get hurt, or something would happen at home, or their truck would break down.
Well, it's weird. It's weird to hear that, and that's kind of why I brought up this, you know, electrician's example about the, you know, the indigo
right.
Because I hear stories about that, you know, including yours, Carmen, here too, about workers.
Yeah, I hear stories about that too.
About just workers, people who, like electricians, contractors, coming through to places, and they have, I mean, we go into this place, like Carmen, well, we go into these places and spend hours at a time looking for this type of activity, right? And a lot of times we don't come up with anything. We don't find anything.
But they go in, they want to just get their job done, and it happens to them.
I wonder if it's an attitude thing.
I wonder, what was... So you started hearing all these stories, Carmen. You know, you collected these stories probably over a period of a couple of weeks. You know, this person...
A couple years.
Oh, a couple years.
Yeah.
So this person wouldn't come back, and these people quit the job, and these people did this. Now, and you, of course, you're there for a reason. You need to be close to the hospital. You need to put all your attention on your kids and your family, and you're there to get, you know, to get through life, and you're hearing these stories and experiencing these things. When did it hit, and even your kids were saying, you know, this place is evil.
My kids were telling me. My oldest boy Paul told me the day he went to pick out his room, the house is evil.
Yeah,
he told me then, and he said, "You're going to find out the hard way." He's very intuitive, that kid of mine.
Mm-hmm.
But and he told me something every day. It calls his name from the very first day we walked in that building. It knew him by name, called him by name, and knew his weaknesses and attacked those weaknesses. Now, how does that happen? That shows an intelligence behind it, which is bizarre.
Yeah, and a lot of these occurrences, I mean, what people experience, I mean, with a lot of stories we hear is, you know, stuff just happens, stuff falls over, things fly off the walls, people might, you know, get bumped, they might get pushed by something, that happens too. But what you just described right there, that's very interesting in its own right. Yeah, this knew his name, knew his weaknesses, knew all these things, and I know we're going to get more into this stuff too, as far as what really went down too. But that is a definite bit of intelligence you're talking about, Carmen.
Right, and I'm sitting here trying to figure out what this is. I think it's the medication or the cobalt treatments to the head and neck. Logical, correct?
Right.
That's what I figure is going on. I figure, and I talked to his doctors about it, and they said, no, this shouldn't be occurring. You're going to have to look in other directions. So I started taking it to the psychiatrist. And in the meantime, the other kids were drawn in, and they were telling me stories of things that were occurring to them. The littlest one saw green eyes from a hole in the wall.
Oh my,
one night they saw four men in their bedroom, and that antique embalming machine disappeared, and we never did find it. Never did find it.
Oh my gosh.
How did that happen?
How big was that thing? Was this
if you figure that one out, Bonnie, I want to know.
Well, embalming machines, they're not really huge as far as size goes, but they tend to be a bit heavy.
Well, no, it was very heavy. Yeah. It was a gray metal box with tubes coming out. I mean, it had the ports for tubes.
Yeah,
right.
It dials on it, and it was a metal gray box. It's very distinctive. You look at it, and there's these dials. And it wasn't even directly in their room. It was in there was a tool room. There were 6 rooms downstairs. Now, they only display 3 in the documentary, but there were 6 rooms plus a long hallway plus a ramp that came from outside that was 10 foot by 20 foot. So this is a large house.
Oh, yeah.
And when that box disappeared, I was there alone with my kids. They show my husband been there, but he's still out of town. And I'm walking all over the place, and all the doors are bolted. The windows can't be gotten into, and I was in the kitchen, the only way in. So I don't know how this machine got out, where it went to, but it definitely disappeared. That was the first indication where I said, okay, a physical human is coming into the house. It's what I believed. Mm-hmm. I didn't know how they were getting in, but that's what I thought.
Let's move on. I want to talk more. I mean, obviously, we're just touching the tip of the iceberg.
This time
right now
is going to fly. Right. I can tell. Right?
Yeah,
it is flying.
The fastest 2 hours on the planet. But we do have to take a
let's
quick
take
break.
Let's take a quick break, Carmen.
Because we play our independent music, and we promise the bands to get. And these bands are really lucky because they're being heard, and you know, on the Carmen Reed show.
It's the Carmen Reed show.
I'm telling you, they're lucky because this is going to be. This is fascinating.
Fascinating.
So, we're going to take a quick break. Carmen, we'll be right back after that.
Hang tight for 1 second, Carmen. We'll be right back.
Okay.
Lama, Isis, Baal. What do all of these ancient gods have in common with each other? They're all going down. World of the Unexplained. Conservative paranormal talk. Big on God. Big on guns. Our God can beat up your God.
Thank you.
This is Scott L.
And this is Doug.
This is Ron.
This is John.
And we are all kind of part of this thing we do every month here on Ghostly Talk, entitled The Discussion on the Recreation of the Philadelphia Experiment, being hosted, I should say, not by Doug and myself, but by Dr. Ron Milione and John Hutchison.
And what we do is we talk about their experimentation in recreating the Philadelphia Experiment, how exciting it is, and how the issues and the problems and the fun and the dreams and the hopes to capture it as a documentary for the whole world to see.
You think 1943 was exciting? You think 1943 was the melting point of physics when people disappeared and the government said, it never happened? You haven't seen anything yet. Wait till what we're going to recreate in 2007.
Hollywood, get ready for the biggest and greatest show of your life with Ron and John that will make your hair stand up on end and fly out of your seat.
For more information and for the schedule to hear John and Ron, visit www.ghostlytalk.com.
And if nothing else works, just bring the blowtorch and duct tape.
This has to stop, Bonnie.
Gotta stop mating like that, huh?
Well, me and Bonnie met each other a long time ago, and
I've been busting his chops ever
since.
She's
been busting my chops ever since. It's funny we're talking about this house this weekend. You know, your house. Well, the house where,
in Connecticut.
As far as Connecticut is concerned, where Karen was living at. The Southington House, we'll call it. Because one of the things I didn't mention about the weekend we spent out in Fremont is that we went to another house, too. It was more just because Lincoln and Sherry are thinking about buying this house. It's a house that was about a block away from the Indigo Inn where we were staying at.
Mm-hmm.
And this house was an old funeral home also.
Oh, my.
How weird is that?
Any advice, Carmen?
Any advice? So I can
run!
Run! Well, it was interesting because, you know, as Karen was describing the house that she lived in to me, you know, and with my experience in funeral homes growing up too, I kind of I know a little bit about how it works and the equipment and stuff like that. And we were in the basement of this particular house that we were looking at this weekend, and they had the embalming room down in the basement with the tubes that go into the floor to the blood tank and stuff
right.
like that. So I was like, oh yeah, I saw that this weekend. And it was the garage. You can always tell a funeral home house because they do have these weird things. Like the garage has this big hole in the wall that's been boarded over ever since, and that's where they obviously used to, you know, roll the bodies through.
Right.
Downstairs and do their work. So that was a place I was. It's hitting home a lot, Carmen. This you know, talking tonight. It's synchronicity at its finest, I guess, because
mm-hmm.
I was just there not 36 hours ago. I was in that house. So I just wanted to mention that. It was a funeral home house. Beautiful house, too. Huge house.
Right.
Oh, this house was a great house. It was a beautiful house. I loved it until I found out there were ghosts living there.
Yeah.
Right.
I've been hearing more about this. People have been talking about funeral homes and stuff a little bit, and we're always talking about different places for haunts and things like that. And my initial impression, honestly, Carmen, has always been
the same.
It seems
as
like, you know,
thought.
Funeral home would be the last place, it seems, that, you know, you have a major haunting.
There's a lot of emotion in a funeral home, you know, sadness and things
mm-hmm.
like that, but it had gone through, but that's like a normal, you know, process of healing.
Yeah.
So
right.
So it's normal to be, you know, sad in the funeral home and things like that. But it's not anything that I would think would draw a ghost, which is like, you know, there's that one show on TV, I can't think of it.
Six Feet Under?
Yeah, 6 Feet Under. And I'm like, you know, I just don't see how a funeral home would be. You know,
why would it be
haunted?
I think the ghost on that one is the actual father of the people that run the funeral home.
Yeah.
Well, I've not really seen that show, but I'll tell you right now, each funeral home is different, and the people that run it and the people that are in it have a lot to do with whether or not there are spirits there. It's not so much the people that go through there as clients, if you will. It's the people that run it.
Okay.
Obviously.
Okay. Yeah. So it just happened to be a funeral home, and therefore add a whole creepiness factor to it.
It did, and the fact that my kids were, or my oldest boy was so close to death, and he was actually given 6 months to live.
Ooh.
When he was first diagnosed, he was diagnosed with non-Hodgkin's. Well, we had a healing performed on him, and it was re-diagnosed down to Hodgkin's lymphoma, which is a lot more survivable. But he was still weak, and I didn't think he was going to make it through. That's the whole sadness of the funeral home, you know, thinking that my son could be in a morgue is basically what was really frightening. In the documentary also, it shows that there's a freezer downstairs.
Mm-hmm.
And people are assuming it's a body freezer because there's a voice that comes from the freezer. Well, the freezer is the freezer that came from us from upstate New York.
Okay.
Because when you have four children, you have to stock up.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Speak. And to get through the week, because you can't go to the store 50 times working and taking care of kids. So I had like 5 loaves of bread, 3 gallons of milk, you know, in the freezer, because you can freeze that stuff and take it out as you need it.
Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't a morgue freezer. It was a normal freezer that everybody has, or people with a lot of kids have, and when my son came flying up the stairs saying that he called Paul's name, which really did happen, I started teasing him. Oh, the bread's talking, you know.
Oh, God.
I was a pretty tormenting mom myself, I guess.
Wow.
Now that I think of it.
Yeah.
Probably very hard for them to grow up around me. But the way I came to realize that house was haunted, and I'm going to tell you a few more things before I tell you that.
Okay.
They would at night hear popcorn popping and smell popcorn, but we could never find the popcorn. So,
popcorn is not something I would associate with a funeral.
Right. It doesn't make sense.
And we would hear a phone ringing, an old-timey phone.
Oh, like they had not
ring, yes.
Yeah, not perfect pattern rings, and they would do the brrr. It was bell-based, you know. With
yeah,
the actual
and they were really scary when they're coming from downstairs and you know there's not a phone down there.
Wow.
And there was another thing, if I would go downstairs to do laundry. Well, when we turned the morgue into a laundry room, we pulled an intestine out of the sink.
No. You guys didn't
say that. Oh.
Well, I personally didn't, but my husband did.
Oh.
And that's what I did.
Oh, my gosh.
You know, we were talking about going to dinner after the show tonight.
We're putting the kibosh on that idea.
Yeah, I think we just 86'd that one.
Yeah. Oh,
lack of a better term. He pulled in an... I mean, we shouldn't be laughing, but we're not. I think we're just surprised. He literally pulled an intestine...
Right, and I assume it was human. It could have been a chitlin, I guess, but it was in the downstairs sink, and we were converting that to run a washing machine there.
Okay.
Now, what happened to me a lot, when I'd be in the house alone, I would hear footsteps upstairs, and I'd run up, because there were two sets of stairs in this house. There were the back stairs that came back up into my bedroom, and then there were the front steps that were in the boys' room.
Mm-hmm.
It was the boys' room. So I'd run up the back stairs and run around the house and run down the front stairs. And then I'd listen for the upstairs, and I could never find the footsteps. And I would hear Mom called all the time, and nobody would be there calling my name, you know. But that happens a lot to mothers anyway. So you don't know if you can say that's supernatural, because it could be the kid next door that I could have heard. But the day that I came to realize that there was a ghost in this house and that they did exist was my son was already out of the home. We'd put him in a mental hospital, my oldest boy. My niece had come to live with me. She was 18, and she was on a date one night. And she used to have this thing at night. It would pull at her undergarments. and pull them, slide them down. It, her bra strap, more specifically.
Okay.
And she would come and get me, and I'd go sit with her. Well, this night, she came banging at the door. It was about 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, and I grabbed my Bible, and I said, I'm going to put an end to this. I'm going to find something in this book that proves there's no ghost. So I open it to Psalms 24. Now that you're in ghost hunting, you know that that's a very provocative thing for me to do.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm reading this, and she sits up in bed. She's taller than I am by 4 inches. And she sits up in bed, and she says, Auntie Carm, can you hear, can you feel it? It's coming, it's coming. And she wrapped around me like a monkey, like she did when she was little. And I peeled her off. But she did that 3 times, and I could feel an energy. To be honest, it was a strong energy. I could feel it, but I thought it was her fear I was feeling. The third time I pushed her off, she was wearing a Garfield nightshirt, and I saw a hand go up under her nightshirt. I could see the knuckles and the outlines of the fingernails, the bed of the fingernails, and the wrist bone go up under her nightshirt and go through the wall behind her. Well, I scooped the child up and ran in to the dining room. She had a rosary in her hand, and I called the priest, and he said, say the rosary and call me in the morning.
Thank you, that's helpful.
That sounds familiar.
Yeah, that does.
I like, take 2 aspirin and call me.
Yeah, exactly, mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it's around 3 o'clock in the morning, and I'm sitting here thinking, okay, I don't know how to say the rosary. So I'm holding part of the rosary in my hand, and it's around her, my niece's neck. Well, it shattered. Completely shattered. All the beads were strewn across 2 rooms, and I picked one up, and the little latches that hooked them together was pulled perfectly straight, like a strong pulling of the bead.
Yeah, like it was just ripped wide, like ripped apart, like ripped in. Like,
as yeah, all that was left was the crucifix and the Mary medal, and that's okay. All that was left together. Well, we picked them back up and repaired it, but before that had happened, she had had it levitate off her neck. I didn't actually see that because I was putting on a pot of tea, being the good Southern woman I am.
Yeah.
And I was putting on some tea, and I didn't see that happen, but when I came back to it, it shredded all over the place. Well, some of the nurses, I used to run the computer control room in the hospital down the road, and some of the nurses had listened to a lot of my stories, and they had given me the Warren's phone number. And another lady's phone number that cleared houses.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I called the first lady, and she was out of town in Florida. And then I called Lorraine Warren, and she called. I got in touch with her. It was 3 o'clock in the morning, and she told me she'd be out the next day. Well, we still had to survive the night. So I'm going back after I put the phone down, and my niece Teresa's sitting at the table looking at me with all this hope that I know what to do. And I'm pretending I do, and I go over and I put the, you know, the tea bags in the pot to boil for some sweet tea. And she says, Aunt Carmen, it's coming. Can you feel it? And at this point, I can feel it now. So I head back towards her, and she meets me, and we're engulfed by this black, I don't want to call it a mist, because a mist would indicate moisture. It was like a black cloud. You couldn't feel it. You know, it wasn't any heavier than the air around you, but you couldn't see through it. It was blackness completely covering us, and the confusion that I felt at that moment was as if somebody had taken every belief that I'd ever had in my entire life, thrown it on the floor, and scrambled it all around. I was completely confused. I couldn't tell you which direction I was facing in the kitchen. I was so confused and so terrified. Well, apparently this takes a lot of energy for a spirit to do, so it could only do it for a few seconds. When it released me, I ran and jumped in bed with my husband. I'm standing on my bed, which normally I don't do.
Yeah.
Standing on my bed doing the pee-pee dance.
Yeah.
And I said, this house is haunted. And he said, oh, my God, they've got you believing it now, too. And he rolled over. So my niece Teresa's standing at the door waiting for me to come back, and I go back, and I'm holding her, and I'm saying, well, the Warrens will be out here tomorrow. And we hear banging. Boom, boom, boom. It's coming from in the kitchen. It sets the 3, and it was just like somebody was banging on the wall. Now, the apartment upstairs was empty at the time. It stayed empty more than it stayed rented.
Mm-hmm.
And so we know there's not anyone in there. In a few seconds, my husband calls me back in. He says, I know the house is haunted. I've known for a long time, but what are we going to do?
So wait, your husband admitted you that he knew that it was haunted. He knew it was, or he had an indication that he had an idea that it was.
Well, he had been hearing the same stories you had been hearing from the kids and from, you know.
Something else had been happening to him. What had happened to him is he kept hearing that music downstairs, and he would hear someone downstairs. At first, he started taking a high-powered rifle downstairs with him.
Thinking it was somebody, a human.
Yeah, an intruder.
A human in there. Then he realized that he might kill one of his own kids, so he stopped carrying the rifle and started carrying a ball bat. Mm-hmm. Now, imagine this man. He's 6 foot. He's a construction worker. He's a big, massive. They called him Big Al. And his name was Ed, but they called him Big Al. But, he's got this baseball bat and his tidy whities going down the stairs looking around every corner for somebody.
Uh-huh.
He was scared to death, but there was never anyone down there. The kids were always asleep. So he was being tormented as well, so I was the only one that was kind of in the dark at the point. Well, that was the last night I was in the dark. It left everybody else alone from that day forward and attacked me almost exclusively. But it still occasionally attacked my husband and my niece, but usually when they got involved trying to help me. Well, at that point, we decide we're going to try to get some sleep to get through tomorrow. Figure if we're asleep, it can't bother us, right? So my husband's on one side, I'm in the middle, and my niece is on the other side. We're in this big bed. It starts lifting up the covers, and I smack them down. And it'd lift them up again, and I'd smack them down. Then it would jump on the bed. Now, this is very amazing. It would jump on the bed, and it felt like it had the feet the size of a cat. And it would walk around you. But you couldn't see it. And I was straining as hard as I could to see this thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it would walk around you. Then it would laugh, a hideous laugh.
Well, you could hear this laugh, Carmen. You could hear this?
Yes, we could all three hear it. And it would growl. But its growl was a deep, gravelly growl, almost like a purr. It was very, very deep and throaty.
Okay.
Then it would leave and go into the basement through the doors. And in a few minutes, it would come back. So it did this basically all night long. And we were just trying to get through the night. Well, the next day we were inundated with cameras and equipment, and the Warrens came in. Well, what I didn't tell you is I have a ferret.
Okay.
And the ferret's name is Missy. And she was a big prankster, Missy was. On one occasion, when we had neighbors upstairs, we saw this Mickey Mouse coming down the stairs.
Oh,
and
no.
It's coming, and you can't see anything with this Mickey Mouse coming down the stairs. And I'm the only one brave enough to walk up to it, and there's my ferret taking this Mickey Mouse by the ear down the stairs.
Like attention isn't high enough already, and then all of a sudden you see Mickey Mouse coming down the stairs on its own. I mean, it's like, okay, are we in Disney World? What happened here?
Yes. Okay. Well, now, I told you about the ferret to tell you this.
Okay.
Miss Warren goes downstairs, and she's gone down by herself to see what she can sense. Well, I had gone down behind her, but I was keeping a distance not to interfere with the energy or whatever voodoo they did.
Uh-huh.
Or that's what I thought at the time.
Yeah.
And I'm keeping my distance behind her, and all of a sudden I see these heels and her come clacking back, running as fast as she can. And she's screaming, a rat's chasing her.
Oh, no.
And Lorraine's such a sweet lady, too.
She's so nice of them.
I can imagine. I can just see that. Poor woman. That poor, sweet woman.
I can't even imagine.
Yeah.
How come I don't
Carmen,
hear
you there?
Audio?
Did we lose her?
Did we lose Carmen? I think we lost Carmen.
Uh-oh.
Well, that's no good. You know what?
I was, like, absolutely enthralled.
We lost Skype.
What?
Skype went dead on us.
It can't have.
We did. We lost Skype.
Oh, there it is.
Let's try to get her back. Ugh. This happened not too long ago, too.
This happened last week.
Yeah. Did it happen last week?
Well, you didn't lose Skype, but
Jason.
We lost Jason briefly.
I want you to listen to the recording.
Carmen? I think,
yes.
I think the last, like, maybe 40 seconds of your of what you were talking about, we totally lost you for some reason. The actual Skype, our phone program we were using to talk to you on, it uh-huh. totally died. It just went pfft and went away for some
reason.
Did you hear the sound? Did you hear that sound?
I did not hear a sound. What we heard was nothing.
Yeah, everything went dead.
Did you hang up your phone and did it just ring and you pick it up? Or have you been on the phone?
I have it in my hand, but I called out your name when I realized I heard a hiss.
Maybe we'll explain that, Carmen, because that I've heard that happen with Skype before where you'll get a hiss and then it'll go dead.
I've heard that too.
So I think that may have just been on our end.
That might have been our end.
So sorry. I'm really sorry.
Good. I'm glad at your end. No, I didn't hang up the phone.
We just redialed you.
Yeah, we just redialed you though, and you. Yeah, that's really weird too, man.
How can we redial her and not have the phone either give us a busy signal? It just reconnected the same call.
Yeah,
I've never had that happen.
No, seriously, this is like really weird. I don't know what happened.
I'm gonna write
here.
That one down.
But it's Skype.
Well, Carmen's had weird things happen to her before, and I'll tell you about some of them if you want.
I'll tell you what, we're experiencing one right now. Yeah. Why don't we regroup a little bit here?
I think it's a good idea. We're going to take a break.
Yeah, I think we should regroup here because that was just like, I mean, I think, you know, hey, new technology and stuff like that can be explained, but that was just kind of strange in its own right because we, like I said, Carmen, you were talking and then we talked a little bit and everything just was gone. You were totally gone. And then,
he just relaunched the interface to the telephone line and double clicked you in order to dial you.
But
it just connected us up instead of redialing.
That was really weird. I don't know. Carmen, let's take a quick break. Is that cool with you?
I think that's a good idea
right now. That's cool with me.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Sorry.
And listen, if you're recording this, if you heard anything.
Okay. We are recording it.
We are recording it. Definitely. We'll be right back after this.